Hello, we're back. It's season 16 of the world's longest running football fans podcast. Thanks very much for taking the time to download. Nothing has changed. It is the same we've always done. So thanks for listening. I think that's it recording now. Yep, so
Testing.
Yes, what? Do you know what I was thinking the other day? Brian Burnett must have one of the... I was just thinking in general about doing what we are doing just now and just chatting. Brian Burnett on Radio Scotland must have one of the best jobs on the radio. Because he just goes on, talks about music, asks people to text in their ideas for the songs, and then picks his favourite out of the ones that people have texted in.
But I'm always amazed by that when, you know, when Jonathan Ross kind of held the BBC to ransom, and everyone's like, oh, you've got to pay your top talent. It's like, talking shit isn't a talent. Do you know, you can find anyone, you can replace anyone in this field, and you'll find someone that within 2 months, everyone will have forgotten about the last guy, and the next guy's perfectly competent at it. Anyway. I digress.
Yeah, we both digress. So it is, I think we are, this makes the start of the 16th season of the world's longest running football fans podcast. Interesting to note that we can now no longer, Celtic fans going to Celtic press conferences, you're now not allowed to say, hi, I'm Harry Brady from CelticUnderground.net, welcome to Celtic, we're the greatest podcast ever. That some of the other podcasts like doing, that line of questioning has been verboten at Celtic, so I'm just going to use this to bum up the fact that we are the world's longest running football fans podcast at 16 years. How long do you think, how many times on and off do you think you've been on it, Anthony, over the years? How many years?
My first one would have been around 2010. Eddie got me on, it was promoting comedy shows. I was doing the rounds. Rounds plural. He suggests there was another thing I did. but no. It would have been 11 years ago, 12 years ago, yeah.
I understand from sources that the new chief executive of Celtic is a long, at least 10 years he's been listening to the... I don't think he listens to it now, so we can say whatever we like, but I believe that he was a long-time listener.
I thought you were about to tell me he came to my comedy shows. he was a huge fan.
He said, you know, he was on... I sent him a text today and said, I'm going to be doing the podcast with Anthony, and he said, oh, passing my regards. He was particularly good that night at the Stand in the West End there. He was fantastic that night.
And that would be true. That would be true.
So, yes, we are 16. This is our 16th year. And in the 16th year, I think Ange might have started the season with the worst squad that any manager has started his Celtic managerial career in all the time that we've been doing. What's your thoughts on that, Anthony? Do you think we are right? Do you think he's got the worst squad ever to start with?
Definitely. If I always like to refer to the, you know, in the, obviously, Christians like their BC and their AD. But then obviously your modern secularists like their common era, don't they? The CE. Yeah. I don't know what. Is it, what is it, B? I don't know. The common era. If we say that the building of modern Celtic Park is the common era, which is, you know, largely with me growing up and, you know, having some clue of what's
after Fergus and before Fergus.
Yeah. AF. But then secularists would say CE, but we are old school, so we're AF, right? after Fergus. At that point, there's no one has inherited a squad so shoddy. Obviously, Wim Jansen had a lot to do. You know, De Canio was going out the door, Cadet was gone. But then, you know, he brought in a lot of talent to replace it. And, you know, players like Donnelly, O'Donnell, McNamara, you know, they remained stubs, remained as, you know, cornerstones of the oncoming success. It's very hard to imagine many of the current, you know, starting 11 are guaranteed to be guys that we're going to sing songs about in in years and years to come. You know, where fingers crossed Turnbull will kick on and be a star. McGregor, for me, already a legend and starting very promisingly as captain. But that might be where it ends. You know, there's obviously a couple of coin flips out there. Some guys might surprise us, but there's some guys that I think we're, you know, minds are made up on that we know, oh dear, you know, their best days are behind them and their best days weren't that good.
I was going to say, and they never had good days in front of them. Yeah, somebody, St. Anthony on our site, when our B team lost to Bonnie Rigg, and he said, oh, I thought we were supposed to steamroll this league. I did make the point that the Celtic Colts team that played Bonnie Rigg was probably the B team reserve since the Colts team, hopefully as things develop, the majority of the Colts team are actually playing for the first team at the moment. So I'll give a pass to the Colts team at this time since you know, I'm quite sure I would be surprised if Dane Murray and Welsh are part of the first team squad in a couple of weeks' time. You know, with the Swedish guy and with Brendan Julian coming back, I'm surprised that both of them were playing first team football.
One of the interesting things about the idea of the Colts team in the lower leagues and stuff is, you know, anyone who's ever actually, I think there's an assumption that, all right, you know, Barcelona B, Real Madrid B, just go out and horse, you know, the Spanish second division or third division or wherever they are happen to be at the given time. It's not really the case. You know, you are playing a bunch of kids against seasoned pros, older men, and it's once in a blue moon where you get a situation like, I think Emilio Butragueno's Real Madrid team got to, you know, Real Madrid B team got to a Spanish Cup final and had to play against Real Madrid A. And I think there was one time Ajax B and A played off in the Dutch Cup final. But that's a really rare thing. And more often than not, you know, those teams in the lower leagues are just, they're not the dominant team. They're not the team that is just steamrolling all these other, you know, they're just there making up the numbers and giving the young players opportunity. So, I mean, who really gives two hoots? You know, for my purposes, the Celtic Colt team is just, it's a more fun version of going to the gym, you know, for these kids as athletes, you know, to go out and play football and get muscled up and roughed about and learn to be footballers. Winning's irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, for me, if we talk on, yeah, the B team is, I think their second game is on Saturday. I like the principle of the B team. I've always thought, really, do we seem to think it's unusual that the teams with good international football sides also have B teams playing in their setup? No, it's not. It's not a surprise because it's a massive gulf between being a 17, 18-year-old on the fringes of Celtic first team and suddenly coming in and playing first team football for Celtic. That's a huge jump. And so some ability to learn on that, because your whole life up to that point, you've been playing with people who are as physically mature or immature as you are, and also people who are as unseasoned in the dirty arts, as BBC always likes to call foreign players when they dive, as if British players don't dive, you know. So for me, the whole purpose of the B team is then once they're there, it's a learning curve. The most important thing is not for them to be, I mean, yes, you would expect if they're very good, they're going to start winning games because they're playing against lowland league clubs.
Yeah.
But those lowland league clubs, for a start, I can imagine certainly at the beginning of the season, there's going to be an element of, I'm going to show you, son.
Yeah.
Like that guy at Kilmarnock when he halved Frimpong two seasons ago in one of Frimpong's first games because it was about, you want to be a showboat, I'll put you up there. Yeah. So there's going to be an element of those guys who do these prima donna kids think they are? I'm not going to get bossed about by a kid. But there should also be that element of that they are first and foremost to learn about playing these guys, not just to focus on winning, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I'm old enough to remember having a Celtic annual, you know, a Christmas gift with photographs of Jerry Britton and Steve Fulton celebrating winning a youth tournament and getting really excited about it. It's like, oh yeah, the next wave's going to be brilliant. And, you know, like generations of that, you know, I've watched so many promising young Celtic players win meaningless titles. And at the time, you're thinking, oh, good. But in reality, you know, if they don't end up playing for the first team and being strong, good first team players, you know, what was the point? And one thing you just mentioned there makes me wonder about the policing. Obviously, you want these young players to get toughened up, but you also want the referees to do their job. Do you know what I mean? We don't want, you know, is it Brian McLaughlin's and, you know, like, you know, the original Brian McLaughlin getting his legs snapped by some dirty bastard. You know, obviously there's a fine line between them learning how to be men and not getting kicked out of football. So there's a big responsibility on the SFA, or presumably it's the SFA, to make sure these games are refereed properly. And obviously the club will be on top of that, I imagine.
You're right, and actually, just you reminded me, one of my mates, he's a Rangers fan, but that, I don't hold that against him. His theory about, one of the theories about why Scottish refs are so shite is in terms of fouls that are allowed to go in Scottish football, that you watch the English Premiership and the guy gets a yellow card for it, and we don't even get the foul and things like that. His theory is because our referees do come through junior football and all that rolling league. The referee standing there and he's thinking, it's only 5 years ago I was watching junior guys putting people up in the air. That's nothing compared to what they did. So we do have to make sure that the refereeing is of a certain standard, and, you know, an indication that refereeing in Scotland isn't of a certain standard is there was no Scottish officials at the Euros, that just particularly when you're not having people allowed to travel anywhere.
There was no
Scottish officials at the Euros.
I'm going to go off on one here. I do remember one specific tackle on me playing for Dundee Uni away at Stirling on a pitch. It must have been the third team or the second. I can't remember. Probably
was it Stirling Uni or just a team in
Stirling? Stirling Uni. And it was a beautiful pitch, like in the shadow of the Wallace Monument. I'm sure local Stirling people would be very familiar with it. But I just remember a foul, like, so comically bad. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, just that sort of one where it's not a 50-50, but you get the toe in, you get away, and this just guy just took me out like the fucking Death Star blowing up Alderaan. Do you know what I mean? Just like an absolute assault. And one for the nerds out there. And the ref just being like, you know, wave it on. Like, you can't wave it on. I nearly died, you know? And one of the odd things, you know, playing out in Slovakia, the refs were always, like, I'd have Spaniards and Italians complaining about the refs out here. Whereas for me, I never played with better refs. Refs that actually gave stuff. You know, occasionally they were a bit annoying, but an obvious foul was always an obvious foul. You know, at times I almost felt it was soft.
Yeah.
But at least you felt like you were playing the game that you watch on TV, you know?
So that's the, so the squad. The frustrating thing is, all of us knew that this was happening to the squad. I mean, from a year ago, because we signed loan players and kept players that our normal business model is, right, you've got a year to go in your contract, we're going to sell you to make profit, and then you're going to use that money to invest it. Well, we kept players, so they ran down their contract. So we had this collection of people who were allowed to run down their contract, or their contracts were expiring, and this collection of loan players who we weren't keeping, and then another collection of people who were just too shit to stay. And so you had this massive group of people that you knew we weren't going to keep. And, you know, Ange's got a challenge on his hands. What's been your initial impressions of Ange?
It couldn't be more positive. You know, just a guy that, you know, clearly doesn't suffer fools.
It's pretty clear.
Scottish football's full of them. So, you know, we've had managers in the past that have tried to sort of play the media game, you know, keep some of them on side, be pals with them. You know, this is a guy that really seems to... Maybe I'm just... You know, I'm going to turn 40 later this year. Maybe I'm just becoming an old man, you know, a sort of angry middle-aged man. But I'm already at the point where wherever Ange goes after Celtic, and let's hope it's in many, many years from now, I think I'll support his next team more than Celtic. You know, the Celtic he has found I hope he makes us great again. But I generally love this guy. My first impressions are, yeah, just a guy who just seems miserable, but in the best possible way.
Aye, not in a negative, pessimistic,
not
miserable.
Negative. Yeah.
He's in a few, you know, Celtic Twitter sticks up. We asked Ange after the game. Pans to Ange. If you're watching that with the sound down, you would think Ange was being asked his bank account details by a guy who's trying to rob. You know, the look on his face is, are you going to fucking ask me that question? That's the look on his face. And then he answers, then it's almost as if at the last second he thinks, this is the in-house TV, better answer nicely.
Yeah.
Because he goes, ah, mate. And starts into gives a decent answer. But the look on his face is, it's a death stare of, where the fuck's this question going, mate? Because it sounds like I'm going to think it's a fucking stupid one.
Yeah. And that's a good thing.
Yes.
I don't know how you couldn't buy it. Well, I guess you could. But for me, it's all positive. He seems like a guy that is, you know, serious, professional, ambitious, positive, honest. Do you mean all good things?
Because the other reason why that's a good thing about looking as if he's going to kill the person asking a question if it's stupid. Despite all this chat about fan media and we'll ask the real questions and we'll... I've been in press conferences after games with Brendan and Neil Lennon and managers of other teams. And I have thought, and see in the game, and see when you go into that press conference and you are really close to people, like the guy at the back of the room, I could touch if I had a long brush.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in the back of the room and I could touch Lennon with a long brush. You know, you're that close. And you know that you're going to be at the next press conference as well, so you can't be a dick. Right? And those are the press conferences where people afterwards would go, if they were listening to it, they go, really bland questions were asked. That's because everybody in the room thought, I'm not fucking asking this stupid question. Because he's looking like he's... Because the manager's just... It's his job. He's just come out of a set of circumstances where he's pissed off.
Yeah.
And he can't be asked for having to speak to these people. So he's barely tolerating having to be in your presence. Who wants to be the person that asks the smart ass question? Because you feel like an arsehole. I remember being in a press conference and there's the room at Celtic Park where they hold the press conferences after the game. The manager sits up at the table and there's chairs in front. And then there's a sort of partition. And the other side of the partition is a bench where you can plug in, because these guys have got to write a 10,000 word or, you know, 1,000 word rather, a match report within 5 minutes of the final whistle. So some of them are not getting the quotes of the manager. They're actually just getting a room that they can sit down. And some of them hit the keys. You know, they think they're working an old-fashioned typewriter. And there's one guy, Brendan jokes and says, who's killing the typewriter in there or something like that? And somebody says, it's Jimmy or whatever. And I didn't know this, but whoever it was from The Sun. And The Sun had just run a story about Brendan's ex-wife or Brendan's son or something like that. And apparently Brendan had... So Brendan then just turns. Brendan, who's always missed a nice guy in a press conference. You shouldn't be in here. And the whole room is like, oh, fuck. It's a bit like being in class when the teacher's lost his rag and everybody else is like, oh, fuck, can't he look this in the eye? Brendan says, turns to Stuart, get him. And now, to be fair to The Sun guy, he'd actually just gone behind. He was getting the press stuff from the other team. And when he knew Brendan was coming, he'd gone the other side of the partition deliberately because he knew he wasn't supposed to be there. And the steward went and got the guy and marched him out. And it was one of those awkward moments. Nobody else wants to be there. So it was really awkward. So the point I'm making is, it actually, a guy who just gives you the death stare will make a difference to the types of questions that are asked of him, because nobody wants to be at the end of that death stare. And he just looks like he's apparently pissed off at the questions. And I love the real frankness of, what about the money for the Champions League? I'm not an accountant, I'm a football manager. You may as well have just said, yeah, dick, at the end of that statement. And then he's
a resident on this podcast who deflects. Anyone with a tie, I really don't care. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to criticise. I'm not going to complain. I don't, above the coach, the first team coach or manager, call him what you want, I really don't care at all about Celtic. You know, in a financial capacity, I understand it leads to it, but it leads into our success and stuff. But yeah, I'm just interested in the coach and the players, and yeah, he's a guy that I think is in a position now where he can hopefully do a very good job.
Yeah, so he's brought some players in. So, I mean, obviously we've not seen two of them play. There's the Japanese forward and the Swedish centre-half. We've not seen them play, but they've come in. What's your thoughts about the fact that Celtic have actually waited, have actually signed people before the last week in August?
I'm still not getting my dream. I want them all arrive on the same day. You know, I've got dreams of 97 when you get, you know, Burley, Larson, Mahe and Blinker, was it, maybe? You know, like a line of them all lined up. That's still my dream. Maybe next summer we'll get it.
Did we not have Guppy, Momo Silla and
Hartson?
And Martin O'Neill? Was it Hartson?
Yeah, three of them. That new white kit came out, and I think they all wore that, maybe. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, that hopefully one day we get a batch together. But no, of what we've seen so far, I'd hadn't watched the previous friendly, so I'd heard previous positive stuff about Abada, you know, prior to the Midtjylland game, and then when he started, it was quite exciting, and he started quite well, scored a nice, you know, it wasn't a goal that he did loads of good stuff and created a goal. It was a sort of striker's goal. It was an instinctive right place, right time kind of goal. But, you know, what a perfect start for any player. I know Eddie Pearson will be screaming, oh no, a goal in his debut. That's one of his classic lines. Worst
Which
case
is
scenario.
Shite.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
Yeah, it's nonsense, yeah.
Far be it from me for it to say Eddie Pearson talks shite, but, you know. But yeah, obviously.
Well, by the way, we'll need to temper the language down here. Your dad will have switched off already.
You've dropped about 20 F-bombs. I've said one S. So, not that I'm counting. But anyway, yeah, so a really positive start. And then obviously negated by the fact that it was weird. I was, you know, I coached out here. And I as soon as the red card to Beaton happened in the Midtjylland game, I didn't instinctively think, all right, how are we going to move this around? But then, obviously, it started happening. You're like, all right, someone's getting hooked here. And I think had it been me, I would have bottled it in the sense I would have said, all right, you've scored, you stay on. Do you know what I mean? I think I would have hooked Christy just out of, you know, Christy, off you go. But I think, you know, Ange probably got it right. I'm not attacking him for that suggestion. I actually think, well, I mentioned Christy. I think Christie's a really interesting one because I was a big believer on him or in him early on, and then he went to Aberdeen, came back, turned himself into a really important Celtic player. Then obviously last season was a shit show. That's two S bombs for me now. And you know, his stock as a Celtic player, you know, despite an absolute wonder goal in a Scottish Cup final and a wonder goal in a Scottish Cup semi-final, Andon, his stock had clearly fallen. But, you know, if Christy plays the next couple of games the way he played the other night and then leaves, it shows a bit of professional pride, I think, which we have to admire. I don't know if you agree or disagree.
No, I do. I mean, I thought it was a bit of Hobson's choice for Ange when Beaton goes off, because he needs to get a back four in place. He's not going to take off one of Sorrow or McGregor because they're offering protection to back four. He's not going to take off the striker. So he's really got three players to take off: Tumbo, Christie and Abada. And I thought, right, okay, so Abada's still relatively new to the team. He's not had a full pre-season. He's not had as much of a pre-season as the other players have had. So maybe Ange is thinking, I would have been substituting him anyway at some point in the game.
Yeah.
So that's him. He's the least experienced of knowing his other teammates. So he might not connect up as well with everybody else, whereas at least Turnbull, Christie have played with Edouard and have played with McGregor and Sorrow behind them, so they know that. And then he was, in the period he'd been on the park, he'd been much more of a dynamic, attacking, risk-taking player. And he maybe also thought there's a greater chance of McGregor, of Tumberland and Christie holding the ball up when the ball gets to them, when we've got 10 men, than Abada. So I could see the logic in the, as you say, you're a gut feeler, but he's the guy who's just good. But I could see the logic of, well, I've got to take one of those three off. So out of those three, that's the reason why I'll go for him. I could see that logic. That all made sense to me. I don't know if you noticed as well when you're listening to it, there was a few occasions when you could hear Anne shouting. And it was as if someone was playing a clip from Gladiator with Russell Crowe shouting. It sounded very, very commanding, very, very Australian commanding across the team. So, but in general, I thought what the worst thing about Beaton going off was for about 25, 30 minutes before Beaton went off, we played some of the best football we've played since COVID. The movement, the one touch, what I actually thought was, see the better players, they're going to really enjoy playing this style of football. This pass move, do it quickly, because better players have got more technical ability to be able to do that.
Yeah. And one of the keys to that is McGregor, you know, in a really key position. I mean, I know Sorrow is still, you know, in there. And I want Sorrow to do well, but I'm not as convinced as I was perhaps previously that he will be a long-term solution. Here's hoping. But I think McGregor really is rising to it. He's a metronome. You know, he's an absolute star. And, you know, as a ball mover, a ball rotator, circulator, call it what you want. He's such a good player, and he helps everyone out. He helps, you know, the fullbacks out. I think, obviously, one of the things that we discussed last Sunday on the live show was the inverted fullbacks, where I obviously came up completely short. Hadn't really heard the term before.
You and Michael Stewart
understand what it is now. You know, it's just the Philip Lamb thing.
Yeah,
and it's become one of those things that it's impossible to talk about without them mentioning Philip Lamb. But then what you quickly realise was that, you know, it works when you've got Philip Lamb. You know, he's a World Cup winning German captain. It's going to work. And the first time you see, you know, Taylor or Ralston kind of, you know, miss control one or something, it's like, all right, this ain't going to work until we get this fix, you know. And to mention Ralston, you know, he's one of three players in that starting 11 that, from my eyes, they are, you know, their Celtic careers are RIP. You know, for different reasons.
Yep.
One of them was, we've said it before, 2 years ago, pre-season friendly, I gave up on Ralston, you know, clearly not good enough. Beaton, his red card against Rangers last year, and I was, up until that point, I was always Beaton's biggest apologist and fan. I genuinely believe he was probably a better player than Scott Brown, but that's a conversation for another day. And then that red card at Ibrox, I think it was Ibrox, wasn't it? It's just like, right, I never need to see you ever again. Sorry, Near, you know, bye-bye. And then Edouard, when he missed the penalty. He missed the penalty against Rangers, didn't he? I'm not dreaming that. That was the moment I kind of was like, right, I need to see the back of you. So the fact that, you know, those three guys are all on the team is, you know, kind of a signal as to the transitional period that we're stuck in right now. That said, you know, the 1-1 draw in a world without away goals, not terrible. And Midtjylland didn't look any, you know, they probably looked worse than I expected. I don't know what I expected from them, but I thought they'd be better than that.
I mean, it was one of those things where it's your state. I mean, I know it's the type of thing that we as football fans would say all the time, but I genuinely think, I mean, I know we went to even numbers of teams, but it just made such a difference, the position of our player going off and the position of theirs, and who we took off as a consequence when we took off an attacking and creative player. If Beaton hadn't been sent off, we were just gaining in confidence all through that game, and you could see that they were losing confidence of, they're just too good for us.
Yeah.
And I think if Beaton hadn't been sent off, we'd have gone on to win the game maybe 2-3-0.
But then the minute he gets the first yellow, was the first yellow before or after he got chinned? I can't remember.
I think it was just after, because maybe I'm wrong, but my recollection looking back was that he was in a bit of a bad mood.
Yeah.
Because he obviously his mouth's all sore, and he's just,
yeah.
as you would be, you'd be a bit grumpy. It's a hot night, you're running around, somebody's whacked you in the mouth and he's been bleeding.
But as soon as he got the first yellow, you just knew, all right, well, he was a smarter player, he's getting through this 90 minutes. But he ain't the smarter player, you know. The body of evidence is against that, and you know it played out exactly as, you know. Had I been sitting in a bookies, you would have made that bet. You know, this guy's getting a red card tonight. And how cheap and stupid he got it, you know, just adds to the, you know, the case of the, what's the opposite of the defence, in a court
prosecution.
Context, the prosecution, yeah. The case for the prosecution. Yeah, it's we need better than that. Okay, and then that takes us to Welsh and Murray. No relation, I have to say. I don't want podcast listeners who hate my guts, and there's plenty of them, turning on him, my wee Dane, as I call him. Like I say, no relation. I have to say, you know, just for the record, I'm not related to him. I don't think so. You know, they both come in.
What was that one night stand that you had after that great comedy night about 18 years ago?
You're suggesting he's my son. Oh my God, I am that old. That's tragic. And obviously that lucky lady did the Diego Maradona Jr. thing and took my name, thinking it would be a lucrative thing to do in the context.
He's writing stuff for Kevin Bridges. He's gonna amount to something. I'm just gonna take that name.
I hadn't even thought. I was thinking a little cousin or something, nephew. But no, God, I am that old. Now you've made me feel sad. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm the biggest fan of young Celtic players getting an opportunity. You know, give them their 15 games to prove me you're not good enough to be a Celtic player. I'm very pro Welsh. I like Welsh. You know, for every, you know, oh, he's not tall enough to be a centre-half, it's like, well, Puyol wasn't he that big? And if he's, you know, a quarter of the player Puyol was, he'll be good enough to play for Celtic for 10 years. You know, that's me being optimistic. I think he could kick on and be a good player. I think he looks like a good footballer. You know, in terms of that sort of ball rotation and moving it around, you know, he obviously had his moments last year, you know, when the entire club was on its knees and we're getting beat by Rangers every time we look at them. But that's not a time to judge a 18, 19, 20-year-old. It's, you know, giving time with a good coach, teach him how to play the game, and hopefully rise to the occasion. Again, we've got Steve McManus on the bench. He did that in 2005. Mm-hmm. You know, he came in, a guy that, you know, had played the odd time for O'Neill as a left-back, ended up playing centre-half for Strachan, and ended up being a Celtic captain. You know, that's the opportunity that, you know, Welsh and Murray have ahead of them. And obviously we're signing players to play in those positions who have more experience, but you know, here's hoping these guys get minutes throughout the season, and this time next year, you know, we believe in these boys.
Well, I mean, again, getting back to the Colts team that we talked about, it may be that Murray doesn't get his time in the first team, but that's exactly why the Colts team is there.
Yeah,
for him to learn how to play football against physical guys who've been around the game and have got 10 years of standing on your toe and pulling your jersey and experience and how to deal with it. And the very worst that will happen to him, hopefully, is that he learns some experience of playing with those guys. The previous worst, and I remember actually it was it Martin O'Neill, who was not a great guy for bringing through young players, but I do remember Martin O'Neill being critical of, remember when the SPL first brought out the 5 substitute rules, but 2 of them had been under the age of 21.
Yeah.
And Martin O'Neill's point was, actually, that was a really negative thing, because what you then did was, at that time, we still had reserves, and so the better young players were still playing the reserves, so you actually picked 2 of your poorer under 21s to sit on the bench sometimes. Which then meant you effectively just had 3 substitutes, because you were never going to pick them. Yeah. Just because the better under 21s were playing. But his point was, if you start doing that, then I'm picking players and making them sit on the bench and they never get game time. So I suppose what you don't want is Dame, your illegitimate son, sitting. He must have got his height off his mother. Is that
6 feet tall? How tall is he?
I think he's about 6'1", 6'2". Yeah.
He's tall and Welsh. I'm not a short man. Yeah.
What you don't want is him sitting on the bench for the whole of the season and playing no first-team football or 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there. You either want him playing first-team football or you want him playing for the Colts team. But we'll see. We'll see what comes to that. So, yeah, I was impressed. I thought, actually, just before half-time, I said, if we can get some better quality players in at some of the key positions, if we start playing football like this, we're going to rip some teams apart this season.
Yeah.
Because we'll just be too fast. Far too fast for teams playing at home on the small pitches, because our problem has been we've been playing too slow and allows them to just sit in that sort of dome shape around their 18 yard box, stopping us moving the ball around. So, yeah, I was hopeful. Here's a question for you that's exercised many people on social media far more than it has me. What's your thoughts on retaining the coaching backroom staff? For Ange?
No, I mean, the he's on record, isn't he, as saying, you know, he'll make a decision on everyone in those roles, and, you know, in due time. It looks now like they're there to be there. I'm not against the idea that, you know, guys have been at the club and, for me, done relatively well. Again, I cite Steve McManus. I like Steve McManus. Whenever I've heard him talk, I'm a big fan of Steve McManus. And, you know, if those guys can represent the club and do a good job, that's good. I mean, for me, obviously, Brendan Rodgers, that assistant he had, what's his name?
Chris Davis.
He was clearly brilliant. You know, he really was brilliant. But then we've now got, you know, ex-players, you know, Ayers quote this week saying that Kennedy's a good, you know, good at his job and doing a good job. So, you know, maybe all the criticism of Kennedy is overdue. Obviously, for me, he had some dirt from last season's debacle, but particularly post-Lennon. I think the failure to blood a lot of young players where the opportunity presented itself last year was an opportunity missed, which we might regret. But hopefully not too much damage has been done. I'm not the biggest fan of Strachan Senior, but I probably shouldn't judge, you know, the son by the father. Ultimately, it doesn't bother me. If Ange is the guy deciding they're there, and he convinces me that is the case, I'm fine with it. And if we win games and Ange does a good job, I really don't care who the guy putting the cones out or communicating messages to the players is.
Yeah, I've never quite got the scorched earth policy of many people who, when you ask them why they don't like Strachan or Kennedy, it's a bit of a, well, I mean, it's obvious, isn't it, type answer that you tend to get. No. Well, they were there under Lennon. It was such a shit show last season. They were, yeah, well, they were also there. Well, Kennedy was there under Brendan, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
I'm not getting my knickers in a twist about it. That's the point. And if Ange, who, like you, I like the cut of his jib, if Ange is saying, I quite like these guys, I'll see how they are, and if I want to bring my own guys in, I'll bring my own guys. If that's his attitude to it, why should we be getting our knickers in a twist about it?
Yeah.
So where we are just now, obvious work in progress. Well, here's the next question. What's your thoughts about the goalkeeper situation?
It's a hard one because, you know, I was hoping he'd have a, you know, a Petrov second season, you know, a big improvement, you know, kicking on and becoming a really relevant Celtic player. He didn't really take that opportunity in the sense that he lets in a goal that, I mean, part of me wants to, you know, had I scored that free kick, I wouldn't have been hearing anyone telling me, oh, right, you know, keeper flapped a bit, didn't he? You know, did you not see me ping it in off the back post? It was a pretty good free kick. And had Turnbull done it, I'm sure we wouldn't have given two hoots about who the opposing goalkeeper was. That said, you know, it clearly wasn't a great bit of goalkeeping, and he perhaps could have dealt with it better. But I think, you know, starting from a clean slate, I'll maybe give him three strikes, you know, to prove to me that he's not good enough. That's strike one. But, you know, he's, the way baseball works, he's got two more. You know, maybe before we get there, he's, you know, he saved a penalty that helped us, made some good saves, established himself in a defense that gels over, you know, the coming months, and we, you know, plays himself back into the Greece team, which I think we can only assume he's not in right now. So I'm not, the knives aren't out for Barkas just yet. You know, he's not on my RIP list, my aforementioned RIP list.
So do you just confirm for listeners, if you just want to confirm your RIP, your list of people who you think that's it, you've seen enough, that's them.
Like as Celtic players, Ralston, Beaton, Edward. Edward, obviously, for the reason that, you know, he wants to go somewhere else. It's fine. I wouldn't have Christie on that list, but I feel expect him to leave. And
Cham, because he's still at the club.
If Ange, you know, turned in Cham into a player, I'd have absolutely no issues with it. You know. Good luck to him. Good luck to him. I don't think it's possible. I don't think Incham wants to be there.
You know, problem is, who wants to take Incham?
Well, it's, anything to sort of, you know, make us as minimal a loss as possible. But the opportunity is there. You know, this is a guy that scored the winner away at Lazio, man of the match against Rangers at least once. You know, a legitimate French under-21 international, mm-hmm. You know.
There's something there.
Clearly not a bad footballer, but, you know, poorly coached and, you know, part of it, obviously he is partially to blame, but, you know, the opportunity is there to prove himself. And do I think he'll take it? Probably not. But he wouldn't be on my RIP list in that I don't want him there anymore. You know, I never want to see Neil Beaton ever again. And I was his biggest fan.
Well, I don't know if you'll see him in European football. Do you know, I do find it ironic that for about the last four seasons we've been saying, oh God, you know, this is how bad we are from the centre-half position, that we're going to end up playing Beaton at centre-half in the Champions League qualifier. This season, we're going into it thinking, hope Beaton's fit so he can play in the Champions League qualifier. just shows you how far our situation had gone with centre-halves.
As now, a potential learning moment, I think we can agree. You know, I'll make it, like I say, if I was in a bookies right now, I'd make this bet. I bet Welsh and Murray are never sent off for poking someone in the head whilst on a yellow card. I bet they get through their whole careers without doing that.
I think you might. I don't think you get good odds on that, because I think that's pretty certain. Anyone else in the RIP list, if I go through? So we've got Ralston. What about Greg Taylor?
Oh, Taylor's such an odd one. In that, up to a point, I'm not convinced he's a bad footballer. But this chronic inability to just have faith in his own legs to get past the right back. Do you know what I mean? I don't expect you to do it every time. You know, not everyone's, you know, peak Ryan Giggs, that, you know, you just go at guys. But, you know, Tierney knew when to go and when not to go. And I'm stunned by, I mean, occasionally Taylor does an overlap and, you know, can be thread through. But he never, ever bets on himself to go buy a guy. And it just becomes, it's surreal. It's so, and like, you know, sometimes it's the smart play, but sometimes you've just got to, you know, when the throw-in, when the corner, whatever.
Yeah.
But you've got to do the Tosh McKinley thing. Tosh McKinley used to just steal a yard and then, I mean, Tosh McKinley's left foot was legitimately brilliant. There'll be some folk listening to this laughing. But, like, Tosh McKinley's left foot was brilliant. He might not have been the greatest defender in the world, but his left foot was magical. He'd a wand. You know, like Chris Commons and Nakamura. You know, we've been blessed with great left footers. And John Collins and many others. But, you know, just, I mean, obviously, Taylor doesn't have that wand. But you just wish he'd just do that extra meter once or twice and just try to see if he could do it. I don't know if you could coach into him at this point. Probably not. But as I think Chris said on the live thing last week, perfect guy to have around as a, you know, an SPFL third choice left back in a grind. The odd thing, the parallel with him and Bain, I never want to see Bain ever again. Bain should never have played for Celtic after Prague. Do you know what I mean? He should have been on the piss off list. Do you know what I mean? Just go.
Yeah.
I understand you serve your purpose. You're a third choice goalkeeper at a big club and you enjoy that. And we need that. That's not a problem. But now Bain's hopeless. So, yeah, I'd have more chance Taylor contributing now and again than Bain ever coming in and doing anything worth doing. If that makes sense.
No, it does. For me, the fact that there was a possibility of Bain being our first choice goalkeeper going into this season. Nothing against him, as you quite rightly say. You know, you need a club the size of Celtic, you need someone who is your third choice goalkeeper, right?
Yeah.
Which is fine, and that's what Bain's ability is. I think he could go to, I don't know if I've said this before in the podcast, there are certain players that you think Hibs would suit you. You could have a good career at Hibs, and you might even get in the fringes of the Scotland squad playing for the next 8 seasons as the Hibs goalkeeper. And that's Bain.
Yeah.
Or Greg Taylor. You know, he could be Celtic's second, third choice left back, or he could have a career at Aberdeen. He could be at Aberdeen and have a decent, steady career at Aberdeen again, having people saying Greg Taylor should be in the Scotland squad and he'd be in the fringes of the Scotland squad. There are certain players you just look at, and it's not being critical or anything, it's just saying that's your level.
Yeah.
But then again, we can't have 24 players all on 25, 30 grand a week who should be first team starters. So we've got to have some players at the club who are solid pros who will do a job for us if they need to come in for 5 or 6 games or run a 5 or 6 games for somebody. And Greg Taylor's that type of person. Bain's third choice, he just shouldn't be first.
Yeah. And again, to go back to my previous complaint about Kennedy, I wish... The one thing that annoys me about Celtic history is players that get you know, real criticism for mistakes that they make, which is justified, I get that. But you get other players that get a pass.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, infamously, Sviatchenko made a mistake at Ibrox, and he was written off as a Celtic player forevermore. And again, Sviatchenko, not a world beater, but I call it like the cut of his jib, and thought he was a decent player. But he was gone. He was on the shit list, according to Rodgers, and off he went. And he's gone on to have a nice little career. Whereas, you know, we kept faith with Boyata. And Boyata was no... You know, Boyata wasn't very good. Boyata isn't very good. You know, any Celtic fan who has fond memories of Boyata being this great Celtic centre-half, it's like he wasn't. He was better than a couple of the shysters that were there when he was there. But that was because the bar was set so low. You know, in the context. Boyata... I'm always stunned when I see him start for a Belgium game and then always completely, you know, the world starts to come back to its axis when you realise when Belgium play a good team, he gets dropped. You know, he never starts the big game, you know? Sorry, I don't know where I started over this.
You were talking about players who get a free pass and players who don't.
Yeah, yeah. So, in that context... I wish the Irish goalkeeper...
Conor Hazard, yeah.
Hazard. I'll never understand why... he made some mistakes, also won as a cup final, you know, and then, you know, got kicked to the covers. Like, there's no way he's as bad as Bain post-Prague. No way.
No, and that was my attitude. I was looking at the three goalkeepers and I thought, right, okay, so he is not as bad as Bain, which makes him, for me, the number two, at least. Yeah. I understand that Bark has... was a big money signing and has an international pedigree. So I understand why you want to keep revisiting Barkas thinking he cannot be this crap. I understand that. But I also then look at Hazard and think, 6 foot, was he 6'5", 6'7", something like that? He's a big boy. He's only 21, 22. Just give him a run of games. He's not chopped. He's had a couple of cut mistakes in the cup final, but he's also had a couple of good saves. He's not been as bad as Bain, so give him a go.
Yeah.
Now I understand from stuff that you've heard, and in fact, even John Kennedy said this. I understand part of the problem is he dwells too much on his mistakes. So if he makes even a small mistake in a game, it lets him bother him, and his performance starts to deteriorate because he's so agitated about that mistake. So I understand that. But my argument would be, and you know, I'm sure if there's any psychologists listening to this, they'll know better than me. But my argument would be, the way to get rid of that is to just say to him, is to prove to him that you don't care about his mistakes and get him playing. The very fact that you then go, ah, Connor, you made a couple of mistakes, so we're just going to give you a rest. For me, if the biggest barrier for him being a success because he's got the physical attributes and ability is between his ears, then dropping him out of the team because he's made a couple of mistakes is only going to compound that. I mean, some of the mistakes he made in the cup final, the one that he got away with was when he came out of the box and made the mistake, and that was an error of judgment. And the cross that he, for me, his mistakes were not technical mistakes of throwing the ball in the back of the net. His mistakes were errors of judgment mistakes, which anybody listening to this, if they go back to our podcast at the time, Fraser Foster in his first season at Celtic, I kept talking about the fact that every one of his mistakes was an error of judgment mistakes.
Yeah.
And errors of judgment can only be resolved with practice. Getting back to our conversation earlier about the B team, the only way that if you're someone who's learning to drive, the way that you stop making the basic mistakes that learners make, someone who's playing any sport, you know, you've been playing golf earlier today, the way that you stop the silly mistakes in golf or learning to drive, or anything in life, is to do it more. And particularly judgment mistakes, because judgment mistakes come from experience. Comes from how many times has he played professional football on a pitch the size of Hampden's against a team, and okay, Hearts were second tier, but still in relative terms, they were relatively elite players for Scottish football. How many times they played against those people to then make an error of judgment about how quickly he can get to a ball compared to how quickly the centre forward can get to the ball? He's hardly played those types of games to make that judgment of closing down. That's a spatial awareness judgment
that you
need practice in. So I'm like you. I think particularly because once the season had gone, and this is again where I can see the criticism of Kennedy, where I do agree with it. You grit your teeth and you say, I'm either going to find out whether Connor Hazard is worthwhile us keeping, or we move him on and he becomes a Hearts keeper, or whether he's good enough for us. And the only way we're going to know is, I'm going to play Connor Hazard for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
That's what should happen. Not Scott. What did we learn? What did we learn in the last 9 games of the season playing Scott Bain? Apart from Scott Bain at 5'11" / 6', he's an average goalkeeper at an average height. That's what we learned about Scott Bain. But we already knew that.
Yeah.
But we've got, at the moment, on our books, we've got the Northern Ireland under-21, the Scotland under-21, and the England under-19 goalkeeper. Well, how are we going to find out if... And obviously, at most, only one of those three can make it at Celtic.
Yeah.
So a bit like when we had Stuart Kerr and Shea Given and Brad Friedel, and we decided to keep Stuart Kerr, Pat Bonner and Gordon Marshall and let Brad Friedel and Shea Given go. The only way you're going to know these guys, if they can move on from being the Scotland, Northern Ireland and under-21s and England under-19 goalkeepers, the only way you're going to know if they can become the Celtic goalkeeper is if they play first team football. And that's where I do have the issue with Kennedy at the end of last season. Should have done that. So any other position that you've got some RIP Celtic players in?
No, they're the main ones. I mean, obviously we're hoping that the guys who've signed already, you know, come in ready-made and click and, you know, look like exciting, promising Celtic players straight away. Still the hope that I've no real belief that, like, a Karamoko Dembele is going to kick on and be a superstar at this point, but fingers crossed I'm completely wrong, and he is. And then there's the other youth players that look relatively involved which can only be a good thing. You know, I guess the downside is, you know, as the great champion of Celtic youth players that I am, there's always the assumption that, you know, the left back's going to be a Tierney, the centre mid's going to be a McStay, and the forward's going to be a Nicholas. You know, it's like, right, I need to learn to temper my expectations. At this point, I would take a Jerry Britton and a Steve Fulton, because in the grand scheme of things, they were actually quite talented footballers. So yeah, it's just hoping that enough of them are really good players, you know. I mean, I'm so fond of memories. Like, I remember we mentioned earlier, O'Neill wasn't the biggest fan of playing youth players. But remembering the League Cup in the early stages, he would. And there was the great night away at Tynecastle where the goal scorers, I think, were Colin Healy, Jamie Smith, Stephen Craney, I think. You know, do you know what I mean? We have had these little moments in our history where we have kind of chucked them in. And obviously over time, you know, they rarely gel en masse and become fixtures. But yeah, here's hoping, you know, is it Montgomery down the left? Is that his name? The boy with the curly hair. What's his name? The boy with the sort of gingery blonde
hair. Yeah, I can't remember. Was he not the one? No.
Moffat. He's Moffat.
Moffat.
So, I mean, you know, fingers crossed, you know, Ange is an absolute genius and turns these guys all into real Celtic players. But I mean, statistically and realistically, unlikely the case. But
it's this quality of stuff, by the way, that's why we win so many awards for the podcast. The guy with the big, you know, gingery hair, that guy.
Everyone knew who I was talking about.
So we've got 18,500 people in Celtic Park tomorrow. I'll be one of those people. I've got a ticket. In fact, it seems to be quite a lot of people I know have been successful in that particular ballot, so that's great. I wouldn't normally go to a pre-season friendly, but you know what? To get inside Celtic Park for the first time since whenever it was we played St Mirren back in February 2020, I'll take that. So I've got that. And then we've got Midtjylland, if that's how you pronounce it, away. So to see if we can overcome, get a victory, since there's no away goals rule, so 2-2 wouldn't count for us or anything. So what's your expectation on that?
Are any of the players that we've signed since registered to play, or is it the same?
No, it's the same squad.
Same squad. So you'd really be reliant on, you know, Edward and Christie turning up and putting in another shift if they're still there.
And of course, Beaton will be suspended.
Not a negative for me. Do the alternative, whatever plan B was, do that.
Plan B's Murray and Welsh.
It's hard to fathom that there isn't another guy, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be tough for all of them. What kind of crowd can Midtjylland get in?
I really don't know. I mean, certainly, I remember during the Euros, they obviously had looked like a pretty full stadium during that. Because I remember there was a game where Copenhagen was earlier in the day, and then it goes to Hamden. And I think it was Wembley and Copenhagen had been the two games before. Yeah. And then it goes to Hamden, and it's like a ghost town. So they obviously had...
That's right. Yeah, Denmark definitely had some fans in, so...
Yeah.
You have to expect that there'll be some fans there. I mean, it's at this point, it's still hope. It's not belief. Although we're closer, we're moving down the road to belief. You know, with every quasi promising result that we have.
Yeah.
We need. It's a really interesting. It's a strange one for Turnbull, I think, in that. Turnbull basically plays in the hardest position that a footballer can play. You're the guy that doesn't get away with sideways passes, doesn't get away with running up and down the line. You're literally the guy that needs to do all the hard shit. But that's your job because you're meant to be good. Do you know what I mean? That's the you know, you're the premium number 10 that you are. So you just need to back it up. You know, that's why... You know, over an extended career, that's why you get paid more than everyone else, because you're meant to be the best player. So there's a lot of responsibility on a young guy, but I think, you know, if he's going to be a great Celtic player, now's the time to start writing that story.
Yeah, the interesting thing was after midweek was the first time I've had a couple of people say to me, and they're not saying, oh, he was shite, there's just a couple of people saying, do you think Turnbull's actually going to be good enough? And it was the comment from the couple of people who said that to me, it was all about what he's doing, not what he's not contributing when we've not got the ball.
Right. Well,
when we don't have the ball, you didn't see him. That was their point. And when you go to an elite Champions League, when you go to elite level, you need guys closing down space when they've not got the ball, and they didn't really notice him doing anything particular when they've not got the ball. That was the sort of comment.
Well, now that we've said that out loud, you know, Ange and Callum McGregor will be on the case, and you know he'll be getting his, you know, his arse whipped, and you know, come on. David, it's David, isn't it? David Turnbull?
Yes, David.
Is it Frozen?
Sorry,
there was a backlash after the live show last week when I didn't know we were home or away on Tuesday. But, you know, some people have lives. You know, we play golf and we swim and we travel. And ultimately, in a world without away goals, where does it matter? I'm glad I've just rubber stamped that I know David Turnbull's first name. A lot of responsibility on all of them. But, you know, we'll be starting the game with 11 men and, you know, another week of coaching with the boss, and no reason why we can't go out and win by a goal. Not impossible. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't. But
we're going to win by a goal, is that your prediction?
It'll be... Isn't it just exciting to be watching Celtic competing again? Do you know what I mean? Like, in our lifetimes, well, if we discount 1989 to 1995, has there ever been a longer window of inactivity? So, you know, basically Christmas onwards, you know, from the cup final onwards,
yeah,
it's been a long 7 months. So to be back on a pitch and really competing again is really, really exciting and really fun to get behind. What you mentioned earlier about friendlies, I've not been to a friendly since Yogi Hughes scored an OG against Sporting Lisbon in a 2-2 draw. I think we were 2-0 up. I don't know if it was part of the cadet deal or something. But we let in two stupid goals, and it went to 2-2. And I remember like standing up and being like, I don't want to be here. You know, I've no interest in friendly football. And I went basically the best part of 20 years without going to a friendly, just because, you know, why would you?
Uh-huh.
And then when Celtic came to play on my doorstep in Central Europe, you know, in Vienna and that,
yeah,
it was rude not to go. But beyond that, no, friendlies, not for me. But I completely understand your excitement of getting back to Celtic Park.
Yeah, so I can't wait to get in. I'm not in my own seat, so I really can't wait for the point where it's so full that we're allowed to sit in our own seats. Because I've been there since the North Stand opened, so it is, you know, that's where I go, that's my place. So I can't wait for that. But just to go, my dad's quite irritated. He's away to the Lake District for the week and leaves tomorrow morning. So he's got a ticket and can he go? So I'll be there with my brother and my nephew. So that'll be good.
Controversial question: wearing masks.
Oh, you have to wear a mask in the ground.
I know you have to, but are you going to?
I will wear a mask.
Good. I was appalled watching the other night to see. I think for all the fan shots I saw. I saw one Celtic fan wearing a mask, and that was someone in the front row, you know, a disabled gentleman.
Yeah, yep.
I saw one, and every time I saw a Celtic fan without a mask, I was not happy about it. I was disgusted by it.
Anyway, I need to go because the phone has just rung, and that is my boy. He's in Arran while I'm here. I'm having an empty tonight. Strippers are coming shortly. So he just phoned me, obviously, to have a chat before his bedtime. So I better go and have a conversation with him.
Okay.
And I will probably not speak to you for ages, Anthony. It'll be ages before I speak to you again.
Long time.
Yes. Right. Anyway, I will speak to you again soon, and I'll say thanks very much.
Right. Hail, hail.
Cheers.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
As I always say, I hope you enjoyed that, and there will be more podcasts along shortly. I know that for a fact because I've actually already recorded another one this morning. It's from the series The Game. It's the Udinese Celtic 1-1 draw in Italy where we had the FUEFA banner. Anyway, that'll be along in the, towards the end of the week. This was me and Anthony. If you've been enjoying the Twitter Spaces Sunday service that Eddie Pearson has been doing, he has deliberately not been recording stuff so that people can't replay his voice and use it in court, but apart from that, he look for his Twitter feed on a Sunday evening and you'll see that. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. We are back, season 16. Ange Postecoglou is going to be fantastic. Celtic are going to be fantastic. We bring in all these players when we get some revamps of modernisation and communication done, as Dom keeps saying at Celtic. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless and thanks for listening for the 16th season. Happiness,
so much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.